very special and a little bit risque episode of Heart, Home, Faith. I'm your host, Olivia. Today, I am tackling yet another tough topic, and I'm so excited because someone who I have just feel like I just became best friends with because we can now talk about really tough stuff together has joined me. Her name is Emily Frazee, and she is the face and the writer behind the blog Total Wine with an H. Emily has really devoted her life to helping women understand natural family planning, fertility awareness-based methods, and yes, the good that Catholic sex is in a marriage. This episode is, of course, for women who are married, not to be exclusive, but that is who we are targeting, as well as women who are about to be married, who are discerning marriage, who are preparing for their upcoming nuptials. So if you don't happen to fall into that category, this might not be the episode for you, and that's okay. But Emily shares some amazing wisdom, and I'm so, so excited for all that she has to give to us, for all that she has to tell us about fertility and fertility awareness-based methods and the good that sex is. Of course, there's some laughter because we can't talk about these things without laughing. And there's also some moments of real darkness as we talk about our overly sexualized society. Well, this is a lengthy episode, so it will be broken into two parts, part one and part two next week. I hope that you'll take the time to do your own research to find your own comfort levels when it comes to talking about sex with other people and especially your spouse. There is so much goodness and so much joy and yes, so much pleasure waiting for us. This is what we need in our marriage, and Emily brings light into a place that is often kept in the dark. So without further ado, here we go. Hi, Emily. Thank you so much for being on Heart, Home, Faith today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat about what we're going to chat about today.
Which is sex, for those of you who are wondering, like, why did she mark this episode as explicit? It'll say that in the title, of course, but if you happen to just be like, oh, a new episode of Heart, Home, Faith, and you're wondering what we're talking about today, Emily and I are talking about sex from a Catholic perspective, which I think is going to be super enlightening. I'm very excited for this conversation. But Emily, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got started with your platform that really brings a lot of awareness to the whole idea of like Catholic sex is not this like hidden thing. It's something that's good. And of course, natural family planning that becomes part of that as well.
Yeah, so I started Total Wine back in 2018 and didn't quite know exactly what it was going to turn into. And it kind of turned into me just talking honestly about living the faith. I got really fed up with a lot of people who just felt the need to sugarcoat things, whether it was like suffering or NFP or marriage or motherhood or whatever. It's like, there's just this emphasis, I feel like, that, you know, we have to kind of put a smile on our face. And it's like, I don't really recall the Gospels recording Jesus walking to Calvary with a smile on his face. So it's like, you know, there's, if we serve the God of truth, like there has to be an honesty to our witness. And sometimes that means that we're going to talk about some unfun things, and that's okay. That's part of, you know, that authenticity, I think, is so important, the vulnerability and the solidarity that cultivates. I'm very, very passionate about that. Just tell it like it is, you know, like there's no need to over-spiritualize. There is obviously a spiritual element, but no need to over-spiritualize. Let's keep this practical. Let's keep this real. Because we serve a real God. We live a real faith. And we're real humans who are going to screw it up. And that's okay. But I really kind of found my passion with talking about NFP. And one thing kind of led to another. And then I teamed up with a lady, Mary Bruno, over at Taking Back the Terms, and she and I co-founded a new nonprofit called FamBase. We're basically it's a fertility awareness database where we're going to help people find a method, find an instructor, but it's not just going to be, here's how a method works. It's no. Here's a woman who uses this method and what it looks like in her life. And we're going to do that for all the different methods of fertility awareness, have instructors do similar things. We'll have blogs, we'll have videos, we'll have workshops. We have so many ideas for where this can go, but right now we're in the process of just building our website. So one little thing at a time, but it's very exciting, very fun. My co-founder, Mary, she is a Creighton instructor and she struggles with infertility. I have two surprise babies and I am a devoted Marquette user. So we kind of bring our two very different perspectives to the table and, just use that as a launch pad to serve. So yeah.
Yeah, that's so awesome. So it's FAM, F-A-M base.
Well, actually, okay. So this is like the confusing thing. It's F-A-B-M. But the reason, okay, so the reason for the distinction is FAM is like the secular version, which allows like fertility awareness method is what it stands for. And that basically means that you use condoms, withdrawal, you use non-hormonal contraceptives. Fertility awareness based methods, when you put the B in there, that's the one that could be synonymous with NFP.
Okay. That is, spell it again.
Fertility awareness based method.
F-A-B-M. I'm making sure I write that down correctly. See, I'm learning new things too. So you mentioned you have had two surprise babies, and I myself have had one who was my first, and that was really just because I didn't know what I was doing with NFP, and neither did my husband, obviously, because NFP is hard. But then this fourth one is something happened to me during the pandemic where I got sick of charting because I was so stressed out. My cycles were crazy. And so every month I thought I was pregnant for like six straight months. Well, the seventh straight month I ended up getting pregnant, but I had just was like, I'm done charting. I don't care at this point. Yeah. Like, I am or I'm not. So I just totally stopped for a month and ended up with another baby, which is fine. Of course.
No, that's great. That's wonderful that you kind of like recognize, because yes, NFP, it is an intense intellectual endeavor. And like, something's got to give. When you're in the middle of a pandemic and you got three other kids, something's got to give. Mm-hmm. And it's fine. Like, I know that there was other people who were like, you know what, I just need to take a break from charting for a month. And I'm like, you know what, your mental health is worth it. Like, do it. Like, if that's what you need to do, and you're like, you know what, if I get pregnant, so what, I don't care. Like, but you just need that one thing off your plate. Like, I think that's awesome. That's great.
Right. And sometimes people hold up NFP as like this holy grail almost, which of course, like, NFP is amazing, but it also is such a mental drain to figure it out. And
well, the problem is that we force people to wait until they're married to learn it. Mm-hmm. And then that is a very high pressure situation to learn something that is extremely complicated. And one of the things that we're going to be pushing with FamBase, and that, you know, I push a lot on Total Wine as well, is that this is basic sex ed. Like, this is what our daughters need to be learning as soon as they start their periods, is how to chart their cycles. Because, and I know that you kind of get it, we were kind of going to get into this later, but it feels good right now to get into it. A lot of times young girls are put on birth control because they have cycle issues, right? And they're told that it's a treatment, which of course we know that birth control is not a treatment for that. Whatever is going on in a girl's cycle, if it's heavy periods, painful periods, that is indicative that something is not right. If they're extremely irregular cycles, or you know, whatever, there's like dramatic mood swings beyond puberty, kind of like normal range for puberty, right? And that actually charting your cycle and charting the symptoms, not like obviously to the level of intensity that you would be if you're like needing to plan a family, right? But just kind of having an idea of when you start your period and then to slowly build and just kind of be aware of what's going on. Knowing the difference between the follicular and the luteal phase and the hormones that are at play during those two phases and the effects that that has on your moods and what the range of normal is within those two phases. Like, this is incredibly valuable information. And it's like when women learn how to read their bodies in this way, that's an incredibly powerful tool so that if there's something wrong, you can treat it holistically and that you can go to a doctor. And when the doctor says that the only option is birth control, you can be like, cute, but no, I know better. I know better because I know what birth control does to my body. All it does is shut down my fertility. It doesn't treat anything. It lets it fester. Mm-hmm. And so many women, I've talked to so many non-Catholic women who have come off of birth control in later life, who went on it at 13, 14 years old for those reasons. And the real tragedy is like puberty is when, that's the time when your brain is setting up communication with your ovaries, right? That's what's happening. And that's why it's kind of it's a little hairy at first, right? It can take up to 7 years for a girl's cycle to regulate. So, right. I didn't know that until fairly recently either. So, you know, this is the kind of information that is invaluable, right? So that when you go into the doctor's office, you have the full set of information and you can say, I know what's normal, what's not. I know what's normal for me and what's not normal for me, right? So you kind of have those two things. So, but learning it at that age is so much better because then by the time you get to marriage prep, you're a pro. You know, and it's not like one more thing because, I mean, come on, like this is absolutely idiotic to tell women to learn how to read their cycles when they're planning a wedding, stress out the wazoo, which has an effect on their cycle, and they have no idea what's going on.
And a lot of them have been on birth control because of the issues.
Yeah, and they're coming off and that, you know, that of course gums up the works. They're told that their cycles will normalize within 3 to 6 months. That's not true. It can take anywhere from 9 months to a year, potentially even more. And so it needs to start. It needs to start. Mothers should be teaching their daughters this information from the get-go. And we need to normalize that.
Right. Okay. So we're kind of like jumping in here, but for those who are listening wondering like, okay, wait a minute. I thought she was putting up this like fertility awareness based method.
How is this going to be explicit? Where I think this is going to be juicy.
You're like, okay, well, wait, like we're talking about NFP and like, do they like it or do they not like it? Well, the answer for me particularly, I love NFP and I also simultaneously despise it. You know why? Because I'm allowed to have more than one feeling about something that's hard. And I think Emily might feel the same way that like NFP is beautiful. It's a great teaching of the Catholic Church. It's a great, great, like, amazing thing for women to learn their bodies, but it's hard and it takes a lot out of women, especially because it's the women who have the cycle. And so from what I've heard from a lot of people, like, of course, men are supposed to learn it with their spouses and marriage prep, but oftentimes it's the woman who has to do the charting. It's the woman who's, you know, noticing the signs because it's her physical body. And so it can be really, really challenging to find a way that it feels like it's a team effort.
Well, I'd love to speak to that because I hate this whole talk of like the way that you share the chart is you have your husband, or the way that you share your fertility is you have your husband keep the chart. No, I know like maybe 5 dudes who think that it's cool. No, the reason why we share our fertility is because our husbands are always fertile. Mm-hmm. The only reason why we only chart our cycles is because we are infertile the vast majority of the time. An egg is only alive for 24 hours, right? Once you factor in male fertility, that's where the lion's share of that fertile window comes from. And the thing that I cannot stand about the way that NFP education is right now, you know, just to not to be all opinionated or anything.
opinionated, Emily. I like it.
And you said it, the way that you said it, it's the charting is on the woman because it's her cycle. No. The only reason why we don't chart the guy is because, well, he's a constant. He can always make a baby. He's always ready to go. And so when you talk about windows of fertility and you talk about abstinence, it's a combined window of fertility. It's not the woman's fault. No, it's hello. He's the fertile myrtle. I mean, this guy is always ready to go. This is why I think fertility awareness education needs to start even younger. And we need to teach our sons, like empower them with the responsibility of, hey, look, son, guess what? When you get into puberty, you are fertile all the time. And put that responsibility on them from a young age to own it. This is just who you are. This is how you were made. And it's beautiful and it's wonderful. But when you get into a marriage, you're going to have to own your side of things. And that whatever decision you make, whether to avoid or achieve a pregnancy, that is a decision that you make and you bear the consequences, positive and negative, together, right? It's not on one or the other. And I don't care if the husband never keeps a chart. My husband never keeps the chart. And that used to be a huge point of contention for us early in our marriage. I used to be so hurt because he didn't want to hear an update on my mucus every day. And then finally, I just had to let it go. I know, right? I want to know all about the consistency. I finally just had to let it go and just be like, this is just not how we're going to share our fertility. Okay, how are we going to share our fertility? And once I realized that, and I never really had it dawn, nobody emphasized that when I was taught NFP, it's all on the woman. It's mm-hmm. all on the woman. It's all, and the way that he's going to be a man is by keeping your chart. And then no man wants to keep the chart. And then you have all of these women who are picking fights with their husbands over nothing,
Over a chart. No, that's not what God wants for your sex life, is fights over your chart. That's not what he wants.
Right. It's no, he's fertile all the time. That's how your fertility is shared. Just own it. It's fine.
Okay. So I was actually thinking today because we've talked back and forth about something. I didn't even send you this question. So I'm sorry, Emily.
Okay. I'm not responsible for my answer then.
It's okay. We've talked about it. You have a good answer for this one. But I have heard from people who feel like NFP is like contraception somehow. And I was just like, I know, see, we've talked about this.
Yes. Thank you for this
call. But I was thinking about this today, okay, well, if God really wanted us to have a baby every single time, then women and men would be fertile all the time, but we're not. So NFP is not contraception.
No.
In that, you're just working with your natural fertility, the natural cycle God gave you to say, hey, there is a big chunk of my cycle where I am not fertile.
Vast majority. Big
chunk where I am. And making decisions accordingly with that. So unless, of course, you decide that you need a break from charting and then you just go for whatever and you end up with that extra baby. It's totally cool. I'm totally excited for my fourth baby. But just in case people are wondering how all that came about, it was because I quit charting for a whole month. But
NFP does work. No. It's always cracked me up that NFP is accused of being both ineffective as a method of birth control and also birth control. And I'm like, it can't be both. It's either ineffective or extremely effective, and you've got to pick. This whole argument about NFP being a contraceptive, I did a very deep dive on this because I was really concerned. I was hearing people very, very who I would consider faithful people holding this opinion, and it really challenged me. And so I did a very, very honest, deep dive into church teaching. Where does this even come from? Why is this something that has caught on? And if you don't mind me getting a little esoteric for a second, We're doing a deep dive, right? I promise we're going to get explicit at some point. Anyway, so if you don't mind the history lesson, back in 1983, canon law underwent a redraft under John Paul II, right? Now, prior to that, the last edition of canon law was in 1917. Now, canon law is really important to understand. It has undergone changes throughout its entire history, some line items, some complete overhauls, and it's not changing church teaching. It's always clarifying. Mm-hmm. Like, we are a body of Christ. We are growing. We are living. And we have our history. We have scripture, tradition, and the magisterium all together helping us to refine the truth, right? That sounds really weird, but you know what I mean. Okay.
I totally get what you mean.
Okay. I get a little triggered because I know that there's going to be some rad trads listening and being like, what do you mean by refine the truth? No. So in the 1917 Code of Canon Law, the language about marriage was that procreation is the primary purpose, whereas union is secondary. Now in the 1983 translation of canon law, that changed. And I can't remember the exact wording of it. I have it written down somewhere. And of course, I don't have it pulled up. But basically, it opened the door to say that, no, procreation and union are dually primary. And actually, the USCCB, you see it in Humanae Vitae, very explicitly stated. You see the USCCB in 2009 publish a document very explicitly stating procreation and union is dually primary. That is fundamentally important to our understanding of the practice of NFP. You know, we're going to get into sexual pleasure in one of our questions. That's where the explicit stuff comes, guys. preview. And it's really, really important to understand procreation and union is dually primary. If procreation is the primary purpose of marriage and union is only secondary, it doesn't make any sense when you tease it out because it has some very dramatic implications that are completely not true. Number one, people who are infertile could not marry. People who are pregnant, women or people who are pregnant could not have sex. Women who are I know, right? Already out the window. Women who are postmenopausal. And ironically, if that teaching did hold, you would have to chart because women during their infertile periods would not be allowed to have sex, right? So you would have to chart because you would have to know when your fertile versus infertile period was. So it's already, it's kind of like, yeah, that doesn't even work. And I understand to a certain degree the reason why a lot of like, you know, rad trads have kind of latched onto this is because it's a pendulum swing from birth control, right? Mm-hmm. It's we know that birth control is an evil, that it does so much damage physically to women and, you know, to marriage as a whole, right? But you can't swing the pendulum the other way and say that, well, okay, fine. If you're telling me that it's all about having a good time with no consequences, I will take all of the consequences and none of the good time. It's like, wait a minute, hold up, time out. No, 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 no. Anytime you start doing a pendulum swing, there's problems because you have opposite extremes and church teaching is actually in the middle. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that we understand the fact that procreation and union are dually primary, that the purpose of sex is it is for the procreation of new life. You know, there's always that potential. We don't do anything to purposefully hinder that potential, right? So having sex during when we're not fertile is not purposefully hindering conception. It's just working with the way that God naturally designed our bodies, right?
Right.
That, where was I going with this? Okay. I was on a roll and I just lost my train of thought. Oh no.
I don't know where you were going, but everything you said is just pure gold. I just, so thank you, Emily.
If I can get minted, I'll take it. Anyway. dang it. Okay. Well, you know what? It's not important because, it'll come back to me later if it was. But no, I mean, you can't, oh, here's where I'll go with it. I don't remember where I was going with it, but here's where I will go with it. It doesn't make any sense if union is secondarily important within a marriage. That doesn't make any sense because the church doesn't care that you have children. The church cares that you take care of those children, right? And that the marriage comes first and then children. Children do not validate a marriage. They don't. Otherwise, infertile, like I said, infertile couples would not be able to marry, because if they can't have children, they would not have a valid marriage. And that's obviously not true. So the union of the spouses is fundamentally important. Union means the stability of the family. The marriage is primary in the family, followed by children, right? God, marriage, children. You have to keep it in those order, in that order. So if you don't have the union of husband and wife, how the heck are they going to be good parents? How the heck are they going to help each other get to heaven, which is the purpose of any vocation, right? So it doesn't make any sense. If union and procreation are not on the same level, it all falls apart. Like, it just, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Oh my gosh. And so, like, what you're saying actually makes so much sense. Because, like, thinking about things that are against church teaching, such as, like, in vitro, that literally takes the union out of the conception. It takes the physical man and woman union out of the picture. And that's why it's against church teaching. And so I always...
You can do that with IVF, but the crazy thing about IVF is, once you know how the process works, it's the most inhumane thing I've ever heard described, like, that you can do to a woman, like, outside of abortion. I mean, it's insanely inhumane what they do to a woman's body. And it's also missing the point. Infertility is not a disease. Infertility is the cause of something else. And so just trying to get a woman pregnant is not solving the reason for the infertility, which is why IVF only has a 20% chance of success. So it's completely flip-flopped. Like, I don't even, like, when it comes to birth control, hormonal birth control and IVF, I don't need my faith at all to tell you why both of those things are horrible. And to me, that's like, obviously in this day and age, that's a very compelling argument. It's like, I'm a Catholic, but I don't need my faith to go after this stuff. Like, the science does it for me. Thank you.
Yeah. It's so sad. And then if you're truly pro-life and you believe that life begins at conception, and then you have babies in freezers, like, it is so sad. And I know there are so many ways that people get upset about this particular topic. And this isn't where we're going today, but it's just kind of thinking about, like, okay, well, union has to be part, like, the actual physical union has got to be part. And honestly, to get a little bit explicit here, that's why the physical union comes first. Like, that's like, the baby comes second after the physical union, right? Like, you don't just meet your husband and get pregnant because, I'm fertile today. No, there has to be
It's interesting, because if that is the focus, then that quickly devolves into use, not love, right? Mm-hmm. I'm using you for a baby, not because I love you.
Right. Oh man, you're making me think of, when I was in college, I absolutely loved coming home from my late night classes and watching Law and Order SVU. And I promise this is relevant, but there was the one where it was John Stamos. So of course I saw him, and he's the bad guy, but I always thought of him as Uncle Jesse. But he was purposefully getting all these women pregnant. And, like, it was this whole Law and Order SVU thing, but still, I was watching this and I was like, that is use. He is using.
So the only way he would know that, though, is if he checked her chart. Like, I mean, sorry, I couldn't resist.
No, it's a TV show, but still, it was just like, all right, well, here we go.
The only way to start down that track is actually what that makes me think of is this idea that, you know, women are, it predicates this idea that women are always fertile, and that I've actually heard that some people think that, like, women ovulate like rabbits do. Like, I've heard that rabbits actually ovulate in response to sexual arousal. I don't know if that's true, but I've heard that. And I think that, like, they think the same thing about human beings. It's like, nope, that's so not how that works.
Nope, totally different species, totally different body systems.
It makes sense, though, as to why rabbits have so many babies, but we're not rabbits.
Nor are we called to be, as we have also mentioned.
No, we are not called to be breeders, people.
Okay, so I guess I really just want to ask you kind of straight out, because we've touched on this a little bit, but, you know, it seems like if you're Catholic and you can talk about sex, you're going to hear about NFP. Like, NFP is going to be talked about, and it's going to be talked about like the greatest thing ever, usually, because people are afraid to say it's hard. Yeah. But what are your feelings about the way that NFP is pushed into this Catholic sex culture? Knowing that it has a place, but also sometimes my personal opinion is it gets pushed to the forefront and then the other good stuff gets left behind. What's your opinion?
My opinion is that it is sold in a sugar-coated fashion, and that is a fatal mistake. Mm-hmm. It needs to be taught as fertility awareness plus discernment. We need to stop calling it natural family planning, because that it evokes more contraceptive imagery, right? Which is not accurate. It's not a contraceptive. It's literally like the most pro-conceptive thing you can get into, because once you start getting into the science of fertility awareness, what you realize is that ovulation is a sign of health. And so not ovulating or having irregular cycles means you're not healthy. And that's something that needs to be addressed. So fertility awareness is actually about optimizing fertility, because it's about optimizing health. So it's very, very pro-conception in that sense. But I just, the sugar coating, it drives me through the roof. It has done, it did so much damage to me personally. That's why I speak out so strongly against that side of things. But again, I think it just needs to be fertility awareness. You start with your daughters when they start puberty. And then once you start getting older and you get into marriage, you add in the discernment element. And then you talk in like speak into the family planning side of things, but you're already approaching somebody who has this beautiful framework. So it's not like you're just, you know, telling them to open wide with a fire hose. I mean, that's what it felt like. And now, you know, I mean, there's just so much that you dump on people, like as they enter into marriage. It's like, you can break this down piecemeal and it's fine. It's not slutty. They're not going to go out and have sex, actually. There was a study that Billings did that showed that if you teach young girls fertility awareness, it actually lowers their rates of promiscuity by 37%. And the reason why is because you teach them how their body works. You teach them what these organs are for, and they have an incredible respect for them, and they don't abuse them. They're like, okay, this has a purpose. And so, yeah, that's, I don't know if that's my opinion on it. I think that there needs to be balance. For as wonderful as fertility awareness is, I think it also should be said, like, hey, guess what, guys? Like, you can also discern that you don't want to use NFP to plan your family at all. Like, that's a perfectly valid response. I mean, like, I think it's Kendra Tierney. I think she's like that she has no problems with NFP whatsoever, but she and her husband were just like, it's just not for us. And it's like, you know what? Like, that's fine. That's perfectly fine. Where the line has to be drawn is the people who say that NFP is wrong because it's contraception. That's where, and they actually have a term that they call themselves providentialists. I've run into quite a few of them. They're a fun bunch. I'll leave it there. But they like that. It's completely not church teaching. So it's like, you don't have to use NFP or you don't have to use fertility awareness to plan your family. Every woman should know fertility awareness because it's just basic health information. Like, I was able to identify, and now I'm treating a low functioning thyroid because I use fertility awareness. It has nothing to do with whether or not I want to have a kid, but has everything to do with how I treat my husband and kids. Cause I was starting to have like some dramatic mood swings, and it was like, I need to figure out what's going on because this isn't normal. And I'm seeing a pattern in relation to my cycle. So I need to go get this treated. It's not just like, well, I just have an anger problem and I need to go to confession more. It's like, no, there's an underlying hormonal issue here. Like we are multifaceted beings, right? We're spiritual, mental, physical, emotional. We have these, you know, facets, and not all of the answers are going to be in the church, in the spiritual realm, right? So we have to avail ourselves of everything. So fertility awareness comes into play there completely. So I don't know if I answered your question.
I think you did, because your opinion basically is stop sugarcoating it. Let's start teaching it younger. And then like you can tell people when they're in marriage prep, this is something you can do if you feel like you want to plan out your family in a certain way. If you feel like I can only support so many kids, et cetera, right. et cetera. But you can also choose to do absolutely nothing at all and just trust in the Lord and have as many children as the God who loves you wants you to have. But the thing is even if you have an NFP marriage where that's what you do, you're still going to have as many children as the God who loves you wants you to have.
Right.
So there's no real difference.
Right. No, there's absolutely not. Like I said, I have two surprises, and we, they both showed up when we were desperately trying to avoid a pregnancy. So, tell me all about how NFP is contraception. I will laugh in your face.
Okay, so getting into the perhaps more explicit for the rest of this, you did a story day on Instagram where you talked about sex stigmas that Catholic women feel, mm-hmm. experience, face. And that was so sobering for me. And so I'm curious what you would say are like the three biggest lies that you found Catholic women are susceptible to regarding sexuality, regarding sexual pleasure, and just like even the act itself. What would your response to those three lies be?
I think that women don't think that their pleasure matters or that it's allowed. They don't believe that they can communicate their wants and desires with their spouse. They don't believe that, basically they're taught to put their needs in the bedroom second. And again, this really frankly goes back to that whole like procreation being the primary purpose of marriage, because the male orgasm is absolutely necessary for procreation to occur. The female orgasm is not. A woman could never have, I know, right? A woman could never have an orgasm and have 20 kids, right? So the female sexual pleasure is very important for that unity. Because the male and female orgasm are structured, it's completely different. The female sexual arousal curve, completely different from the male arousal curve, right? And Pope John Paul II goes into this in Theology of the Body, right? And he talks about how a husband should regulate himself to help his wife achieve orgasm, and that his focus, because his arousal curve is a lot shorter, hers is a lot longer, that you need to regulate yourself to meet up, right? So this is fundamental. I also, you know, Theology of the Body, we think about what the body teaches us about spiritual truths. The point that I made that day was simply this. Women have an organ called the clitoris. And it is an organ that has one function and one function only, and it is sexual pleasure. It serves no other function whatsoever. Now, little syllogism here. God is good, and all he made is good, right? God designed the female body, including the clitoris. Therefore, the clitoris is good. Therefore, female sexual pleasure is what God intended, right? Okay, so you're tracking with me. But we have so denigrated female sexual pleasure in favor of male sexual pleasure. And it's not just religious circles that are guilty of that, obviously. It's also, you see it in purity culture and you see it in eroticism. Again, that pendulum swing. It comes into play here, these opposite extremes, where you have eroticism in the culture that says that pleasure is the sole good. As long as there is consent, anything and everything is on the table. And obviously, as religious people, we're like, well, no, that's not right. But we have swung the pendulum, and now we say, well, pleasure is bad. And that is actually a heresy called Jansenism. This guy, this Catholic bishop named Jansen in the 1600s, he came out and said that we are so corrupted by original sin that we don't have the ability to choose good. Therefore, we should eschew anything that could remotely lead us down a bad road. Essentially, that's what he said. And the reason why it was a heresy is because it dismissed the saving power of baptism, right? That we are washed clean of original sin in baptism. Well, how can we still be so tainted by original sin? You know, I mean, I know that there's like, there's concupiscence and all that, right? Right. We're still sinners. We still can sin. We still can choose. But it was so insidious. And if you apply this to the sexual realm, you see where it has done so much damage. So in purity culture, we have this like elevation of the virgin, right? It's like, well, you're not holy because you had never had sex. Like, you're holy because you're chaste, because you say yes to God. And your yes to God is going to look different in different stages of your life. And when you're not married, it looks like virginity. But I mean, if you're a virgin and you're a really proud virgin, it's like, well, that's not very holy, is it? You know, I mean, so we've elevated the wrong thing. But what's really fascinating is that both in eroticism and purity culture, you have the same problem. Male sexual pleasure is prioritized over female sexual pleasure. In eroticism, you might kind of question like, well, not really in eroticism. Actually, yes. Because if women are supposed to be on birth control kills your libido, right? So we don't care about female sexual pleasure because all we care about is that she doesn't get knocked up. But in purity culture, if it's all about, you know, oh, don't have sex until you're married. And once you're married, it's all about making babies. It's like, well, then that's all about the male orgasm, right? So, and it's no, like it's both and. The other thing is, let's kind of get into the nitty gritty of male versus female orgasm, right? Let's talk about this.
Let's do it.
So the male orgasm is very physical, right? It's as I once heard a Protestant pastor say in a marriage conference, he said, all a man needs for great sex is for the woman to show up. And not wrong. But obviously women are very different. For women, our orgasm is mental and emotional. It's not just physical. I've had this happen so many times where everything was physically right, but because something was going on in my head and I was not able to achieve orgasm. And then I realized it afterwards and I was like, oh, I was really stressed out about X, Y, and Z that had nothing to do with what was happening right now. Or I felt very emotionally distant from my husband. It was very hard for me to connect in that moment. But recognizing that, so that's where it becomes the whole person, right? Because you have this physical element and it's, you know, very heavily physical on the male side, but then you also have that mental and emotional side with women. And then you bring that together and it's like, aha, it's the whole person, right? You need all of it in order to make great sex, right? Like, it's not just about putting the right thing in the right spot and rubbing the right parts until you both hoo-ah, you know? I mean, it's like, it's both and, right? And so that's when you understand that the differences are not just to annoy the ever-loving crud out of you. It's to make you go outside of yourself and focus on the other person. And if both husband and wife are doing that, not just in the bedroom, outside the bedroom, right? Sex doesn't happen in a vacuum. Whatever happens in the bedroom started somewhere else. The expression sex is a form of communication. Like you're communicating something that started somewhere else. Right? So it's very important to focus on the whole relationship in order to make sex better. Now, I mean, like I said, for women, the clitoris is like kind of the money when you're talking about an orgasm, right? Which brings up a lot of questions about like, well, if I don't orgasm during penetration, well, what's okay for me? Like, this is a huge question that women run into. And it's like, well, honey, let me just tell you that only about 10% of women can achieve orgasm through penetration. So either find a good angle or stimulate the clit before or after penetration or during some, you know, if you need to use a vibrator during, that's, you know, listed as part of, you know, finding that union. What I have kind of found is that sometimes, like, first of all, sex is something that you have to learn. It's an activity you have to learn. Like, this is kind of a weird analogy, but if you think about a little kid learning to walk, they don't just get up and start going. Like, this takes time. This takes practice. This takes repetition. Oh, darn.
I mean that, oh, darn, there is something that is not good in your sex life. So, seriously. Like,
no, I'm saying, like, oh, darn, we have to keep practicing, babe.
right.
No, but, like, but a lot of people, you know, because we watch movies and because there's, like, kind of, I guess, like, porn culture that kind of trickles down, like, you watch these rom-coms and, like, the example that I use all the time is The Notebook. And she's a virgin and she's losing her mind after 2 minutes in missionary position. And I'm like, no, 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 that didn't happen. That did not happen. She is in so much pain because they did no foreplay. They had a heavy makeout session, which is not enough foreplay, and then just moved right in. Like,
were they on the floor too? Like, what? Weren't they on the floor too?
They ended up on the floor, but no, I think the first time was in bed. And it just, like, no, like, the wrong angle. She was not, no. Because here's the other thing that I learned recently. The vaginal canal actually changes size and shape during arousal. It actually widens and lengthens during foreplay and arousal. So in order for penetration to be comfortable, you have to have it. Like, foreplay is not a physiological option for women. Like, it's a physiological necessity. So, like, the other example that I use is that movie The Holiday with Cameron Diaz and Jude Law when they're doing their little one-night stand, and he asks her, like, so what do you think about foreplay? And she goes, I think it's overrated. And I'm like, no. I'm like, your vagina hates you so much. Like, it's, like, not even funny. Like, but he's super turned on by that. So the message is, you know, if you don't have any foreplay, if you just go straight into sex, like, oh, it's going to be great. And it's like, this is where I mean that eroticism does so much damage to women, right? And elevates male sexual pleasure. Because mm-hmm. men don't want to have to take the time and put in the work. They just want to cut to the chase. But if a woman is going to enjoy sex, you have to invest the time, right? And what happens is that obviously that increases that intimacy, that connection. And we're really selling men short because we're treating them like these insatiable sex fiends. And it's like, no, they're human beings. They're capable of loving and being loved deeply. Like, they have that desire for that deep connection. So they're depriving themselves of that deeper desire by emphasizing that, like, well, I mean, if you're just hot enough and just make out with her in the right way, she's going to be ready to go immediately. And if you don't, it's like, no, 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 no. Like, she's a person. She's a unique person. And even if you've been, like, I say this to people, like, even if you've been sexually active prior to marriage, there's sex and then there's the person that you married, right? Sex is an activity. Like, if you can, you get the logistics, great, but then you still have to learn a person. Mm-hmm. Right. And how that unique person's body responds to your body. And that's a process. And, like, that's why marriage is for life, because that's how long it takes to get any good at it. You know, I mean, like, let's just be realistic here. Like, it's not, you don't just jump into bed and everything's fireworks. It's like, no, you jump into bed and you're like that scene in those cowboy movies where they got those flints and it's one of those guys that's like the city boy. He has no idea what he's doing. He's scratching that flint. He has no idea. All right, I'm done with that analogy. But you know what? It's not fireworks. It's that loser who has no idea what he's doing. And that's fine.
Right. And the other thing too is, you know, your husband married you because he loves you, which means he wants you to feel pleasure,
right?
And right. He's like, there is no man who loves you who is like, hey, let's just use you and let's just make sure I feel good. Like, no, your husband wants you to communicate with him too.
Thank you.
A big, big thank you to Emily for joining me today. Come back next week for the continuation of our conversation about Catholic sex.